National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Media images for the last 2 weeks have shown a mixture of protest, rage, violence, and destruction that have captured cities across our country after the unjust and tragic death of George Floyd. But one adjective to describe this moment that deserves a lot more focus is grief. On Register Radio this week, we are joined by Register columnist Monsignor Charles Pope, who shares his grief and insights as a pastor of a diverse inner-city parish in Washington, D.C. And then we turn to another Register contributor, Paul Kengore, about some similarities between the summer of 1969 and the summer of 2020. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen, and, of course, Monsignor Pope. Monsignor Pope has long had a daily blog, and he's written for almost, 4 or 5 years for the Register, almost a column a week. But first and foremost, Monsignor Charles Pope is a priest and a pastor of a parish in the Archdiocese of Washington. And it's in this role as pastor of a diverse inner-city parish that I sought him out, or my editors sought him out this week, to ask him how he is seeing this moment in our country, the strife in our country. What we sought was the words of a pastor, because it's at moments like this that we seek out our pastors, the people who care for our hearts and for our souls. And so, Monsignor Pope, thank you for being with us today and sharing your pastor's heart. That's what your column spoke about, was kind of your pastor's heart and about grief. So thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Jen. I'm glad to be here. Yeah.
So really, to start, I mentioned several times that you were a pastor in a Washington, D.C. parish. We've seen a lot of what is happening in Washington right now, riots and some peaceful protest and some that have really shaken things up, to say the least. How has your community experienced this moment?
Well, now, when you ask that question, I'm in an unusual situation in that my community isn't regularly gathering. Our churches are still shut down. But in general, I mean, you know, I want to say, you know, as a pastor, you know, there isn't a lot of violence right near the parish. We're up on Capitol Hill area, and the trouble area is down near Lafayette Square by the White House. But, you know, as a pastor, I interact with very diverse groups of people, and it's a pretty, you know, I could say some really love the president, even work for him. I have a number of people in the congregation who are staff members at the White House, speech writers and other fairly, and others who really do not like the president. And I have African Americans, and I have white and other mixed, you know, ethnicities. It's an older congregation and a younger congregation, all kind of blended together. And also, I have lots of people who write to me from all over the country. And so I hold all these people in my heart because I love them all. And I'm very sensitive, certainly over the years, to the fact that the racism that is spoken about is really true. It's experienced very. These are people, men and women, who practically raised me. I've been here for off and on in this parish for the better part of 28 years. And I trust these men and women. They're not lying to me. They talk to me about driving while black. They talk to me about some of the, you know, the terrible things of, you know, trying to hail a cab while black. It's very real, and it hurts them deeply, and there's a long history to it. And also police extremism and the way they feel treated at times by the police in comparison to others. So that I hold that in my heart, and that's very, very real. And this whole thing opens up and points to a very deep wound in their hearts that I'm very sensitive to. And but I find it so sad that I thought the whole nation agreed that what happened to George Floyd was absolutely horrifying, and that these police officers needed to be prosecuted to the full degree. And so I find it so sad that this thing boiled over into such rage that we all went to separate camps again. The thing that the very thing united us separated us. And then I talked to more traditional, maybe Catholics or Catholics who aren't largely African American, and they feel hurt in similar ways, but for different reasons, because they too feel a certain unfairness about a lot of things. And I can detail those for you, but I've been talking too much. Let me let you come back.
No, that's okay. I mean, this is exactly what I wanted to hear. It's why we wanted to turn to you, is because you do hear from so many people, and you do have that experience talking to so many people about these moments. And the Register has covered in the past this experience of racism that African Americans experience. We remember covering a priest who was African American in Baton Rouge, and he, you know, would experience, as you said, you know, driving while black or jogging while black, you know, and just what that experience of profiling, racial profiling, had been like for him. But it is, it's moments like these are very difficult to cover as Catholic media. I'm just to speak from my own experience this week and the experience of my team, because we hardly know what to do. The Register provides tries to provide in-depth coverage, not simply the retelling of the news. I mean, there are a lot of news media doing the retelling of news, right? But can we provide some depth is what we always try to do. And it's moments like these that sometimes it's hard to boil down to that depth. Everything becomes reactionary. And as you said, people move into their camps, and it's very hard to talk to each other. But I thought that the word, you know, your column, A Priestly Testimony of Grief in Times Like These, that's part of the title.
Yeah.
And that word grief really struck me, because I think that underneath the rage really is a deep grief.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to sit in grief. You must know that as a pastor, as you see ranges of emotions to the people who speak to you. Grief is hard.
It is. Yeah, and the Norse word angar is where we get the word anger, but it also translates grief for them, that language. So, yeah, and so as I say, just to finish the first part of the, you know, the one group I hold deep in my heart would be my African American parishioners, again, who've been so good to me over the years and so kind, and yet they have this pain, this grief that they carry, and I think it we owe it to the African American community to remember this moment about George Floyd very well, and, you know, to allow it to pave the way for legitimate legal reforms and changes to police procedures, but also to the conversion, you know, of our own hearts. Even if and when we were dubious or dismissive, especially of the seriousness and the depths of this real racial injustice, which still exists in our time, and it shouldn't be just dismissed. It's very real. It's more maybe subtle than it was in the 50s, but it's still very real for them. And I talked to more traditional Catholics, and they actually have a very... Their grief is similar, but it's about different things. And again, it's the basic sense of unfairness that they see in some of the reactions and things. And I guess I could start to detail them, but I think, you know, maybe I list a few of them that come up most commonly in the people who write to me. One of them is that, you know, here we are in the midst of pandemic, and we've been told that gathering in large numbers without proper social distancing was so dangerous, that we had to close our parishes, we had to end public masses altogether. And then in the midst of the same pandemic then, when our parishes must remain closed, these same public officials have said little or nothing about the danger of these large demonstration groups who break almost every social distancing norm.
Right.
Now, when I'm talking about the rioters, that's clearly, but I mean, even those who are legitimately protesting, and I'm a fan of protests at normal times, but we were told that in this time of pandemic that we were not to come out of our houses, that we were to stay close to home and all these things. And nevertheless, our parishes still remain closed, because apparently to gather in church is so dangerous,
right,
that it's far more dangerous than people outside in large crowds yelling, you know, all the stuff. We're not supposed to sing, we're not supposed to raise our voices, stand anywhere close to each other. All these things are being broken, and yet our parishes still remain closed. And protest is important, but so is prayer.
Exactly.
And so there's a sense of a lack of fairness or parity. And so this is the kind of, that's one area. There'd be another area where I think, you know, the vast majority of, you know, protesters were peaceful and orderly. Sadly, we know there was a certain small number who chose the opportunity to riot. Some of them are maybe have been outsiders. We don't know where they all came from. But you know, the thing that I think really began to make people feel that this is just not fair any longer is that, you know, there was, many people started to legitimize the rioting. And as if to, you know, and they even invoke Dr. King, and I'm a great fan and a great student of Dr. King, and they quote him as saying, you know, that the riot is the language of the unheard. Now, Dr. King was the king, if I can put it that way, of nonviolence.
Right.
And then, but now, to even mention this violence and to lament it and the destruction of property and theft and even hurting and harming people, hitting them with 2x4s and all of this kind of stuff is so we have to understand this. And it seems like there's a very selective outrage. We're to be outraged, as we should be, at the death of George Floyd, but we're not to be outraged at the terrible destruction of property and livelihoods of people who didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
So I think that a lot of people feel, again, this is not fair. And then many have been immediately labeled as racist because they have this concern. I lament the death of George Floyd like anybody, but I do also lament the terrible destruction that we've seen. It's just awful. And these are people's livelihoods. These are people's jobs going away. And so you see the idea. So there's
exactly.
A perceived imparity or sort of selectivity. And I have a third one that's closer to home, because this involves my own archbishop, but of course it could involve bishops anywhere. But there was an awkward moment, shall we say, when the president went to the John Paul II Center here in D.C. to take part in something that had been planned long ago, a religious liberty event. Now, why, strangely enough, the archbishop hadn't been invited at the same time, I don't know. So there's a lot of background stuff that wasn't wrong. It was probably imprudent for this event to go on. And I think that the archbishop spoke very strongly in condemnation of this, and in some sense I think he should have. You know, this was just not the time for that, given all that's going on. All right, but listen to how he spoke so strongly. The archbishop said, "I find it baffling and reprehensible that any Catholic facility would allow itself to be so egregiously misused and manipulated in a fashion that violates our own religious principles." Now, agree or not, these words are strong, and I'm looking for some strong language from our bishops in other areas too. For example, why is the same language not used when Nancy Pelosi is honored to give a graduations, you know, speech at a Catholic
right.
university? Where are our bishops with language like this then? And so again, many Catholics are brokenhearted, not because they don't perceive that perhaps Archbishop the Archbishop here, Gregory had a right to speak and maybe even speak strongly, but at the end of the day, why don't we hear this type of language from our bishops at any other time? And so, again, it seems so unfair.
Exactly.
And just to all of our bishops, please hear the cry of your faithful who long for this sort of clarity and strong denunciation when it comes to less safe issues like abortion or same-sex attraction or transgenderism, or when James Martin just walks into a Catholic institution. Where is the strong language then? You know, these are the things that I think... That's where a lot of grief lodges in the hearts of other Catholics, too.
Exactly.
But it's so similar. Unfairness, racism, unfairness, you know, selective outrage, you know.
I've said, you know, many times throughout this, your piece recognizes multiple levels of grief here that so many of us feel, that this, this moment, many of this, all of it deserves to be recognized as true causes of grief that need to be responded to with leadership. And in many times that leadership has failed, whether it's the police failure and gross injustice there, whether it's the failure of bishops to really speak up, or the failure of politicians to actually respond appropriately and not use certain moments as partisan moments. And so there's a lot of failures going around, but there are also there's a lot of grief that needs to be recognized. So again, I'm going to say the name of this column so our listeners can go to ncregister.com to look it up. I would search, if you can't find it on the homepage, "A Priestly Testimony of Grief in Times Like These" is by Monsignor Charles Pope. Monsignor Pope, as always, it's so good to talk to you. It's so good to have you in our pages, and most of all, it's good to have your priestly ministry. Thank you.
Oh, bless you. Thanks for having me on.
We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we'll be joined by Paul Kengor, another Register contributor, about the similarities of the summer of 1969 and 2020. This is Register Radio on EWTN. More when we return.
In these uncertain times, Catholics depend on EWTN's National Catholic Register. The Register is so much more than a newspaper. It's your faith, your life, your source of information and spiritual resources. The Register is uplifting, redemptive journalism, interviews with Catholic leaders and newsmakers, liturgical coverage, health, financial, and political topics, and analysis of the key issues you care most about. EWTN's National Catholic Register covers every aspect of the Catholic faith that impacts your world. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. That's ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. You know, one of the most underreported stories of the last week was the launch of SpaceX rocket into orbit from Florida, marking the first launch of a U.S. astronaut into space in nearly 10 years. It really is an exciting moment that, like I said, just didn't get much attention for obvious reasons with the unrest of the last 2 weeks. But it echoes something that happened in 1969, and when one of my editors realized how much similarity there was between this launch of a spaceship and the launch of Apollo mission in 1969, they called up Paul Kengor to write about it. So we decided to have Paul on to talk about it on this show. Paul Kengor is a professor of political science at Grove City College, and he's a Register contributor. Welcome, Paul.
Well, thanks, Jeanette. This is one of my favorite shows. Good to be on again.
You always flatter me. but, you know, Tom Wehner, one of our editors, called you up this week and said, hey, I think I have a story for you this week. It was, let's explore the similarities between 1969 and 2020. And it was more, obviously, more than a space shuttle. So what did you discover as you started to look at Tom's pitch?
Yeah. Well, Tom, in his wisdom, noted that 1969 had this obviously famous Apollo 11 mission, July 1969. Three astronauts landed on the moon, and he noted that that was also a time of social and political chaos. And he said, and here we are in 2020, and because of the pandemic and the George Floyd protests, It seems like the chaos overwhelmed what should have been an event that got a lot of attention, or should have gotten a lot of attention. And I thought, wow, how right you are, and even more so because the different things that happened in 69, it's something that I've just written about in books previously. And so I knew about, I mean, boy, that summer of 69, the Stonewall protests, Ted Kennedy and Mary Jo Kopechne and Chappaquiddick, the Manson family murders, Woodstock. It was a crazy time, and most people probably wouldn't have thought of this, but I knew about the SDS convention, Students for a Democratic Society, that would lead to the Days of Rage, and something that, because I'm a historian of, I guess, all kinds of weird things, Jeanette, but among other things, I was a pre-med student as an undergrad, and I was a biochem biophysics major. This is a long story. So I've always been interested in the history of disease and medicine, and I knew because I had read it more recently as well, that there was a major pandemic in 1969. It was the Hong Kong flu, and it was a major respiratory issue. In fact, the technical name for it was called H3N2, so it's kind of the 1969 version of COVID-19. And like COVID-19, it was brutal on the respiratory system, and this is really kind of chilling. It ended up killing over 100,000 people in America, which was over a much longer period than COVID-19, but chillingly similar to where we are right now with 100,000 COVID-19 deaths. And so in many ways, what Tom was thinking about there, boy, I think he was onto something even more than he realized. The parallels between 2020 and 1969, I think, are pretty rich.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing how much history repeats itself. Sadly, I guess we might say, don't you wish we were better prepared for this moment? I mean, it's almost baffling with how much history repeats itself that we aren't better prepared for a moment.
Well, and it's a shame, and this was sort of my main theme in the piece for the Register, that in 1969, July 1969, the nation was riveted by Apollo 11. The world was. In fact, I even quote Pope Paul VI with his beautiful language about how important that was. And so for the country, the world, but especially for the country, it was a much needed respite from all the chaos and turmoil, and it was a time of national unity. And quite unfortunately, Jeanette, here in this past week in 2020 with this SpaceX launch, which should be a welcome respite, which everybody should be celebrating, you could have easily missed this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was hardly reported on. I think some of the regular news roundup sites that I go to didn't mention it at all. And it's a really big deal because NASA, which is broke, the federal government is broke. They've reached this partnership with Elon Musk and his private company. So we figured out a way through a public-private partnership now to put people back in space. Our sites now are not on the moon but on Mars. So this should have been a moment this week where everybody was watching their TVs and celebrating. But instead, all people watched was bad news, political news, and riots, and that's really a shame.
So it comes down to, in a way, doesn't it, the editorial choices on the part of the media and what they're focusing on, or is there something even deeper at play here?
Oh, it does, Matthew. And I mean, for the media, I think currently, unfortunately, all news is political news, all news is bad news. And that's especially so in 2020. And I think the political element of it right now, I mean, we could see this with so many of it, the media, especially, I mean, I don't want to be political and partisan about it, but certainly liberal media sources are looking for ways to kind of hammer Donald Trump. And so you know, this can be used in service of that goal, right? And, you know, even COVID-19 has been politicized. the political weaponization of a pandemic, it's insane. But yeah, so a lot of it is editorial choices, and the press could have changed this by at least taking a good 24 to 48 hours to make a big deal about the space launch. But again, every time I turned on the TV, I didn't see anything about it whatsoever.
This is something particularly important because this marks sort of private enterprise making this progress, which we saw even in history of exploration, didn't we?
Yeah, and in fact, President Trump, who watched it, observed it, and he called this not just an inspiration for our country, but the exact quote was, he said, the launch makes clear the commercial space industry is the future. And that's quite true. It really is. I mean, we're now at the point where, I mean, you know, it takes somebody with a lot of money to do something like this, right? The guy down the street can't just go and set a rocket off into space, but it is technologically feasible. It's financially feasible with certain people with the financial means to go ahead and do this. And so really, in a way here, this is not just a resurrection of the space program, but the rescuing of the space program. They shelved space shuttle launches going back to, I think, about 2011. It's been almost 10 years. And a lot of that happened after 9/11. It was bipartisan. It was under President Bush. It was under President Obama. And so for now to have this opportunity with sort of the private sector to the rescue, it's a great moment. And yet, again, it was a moment that I think was not appreciated for what it should have been.
You know, I can't ask you to predict the future, but being a historian and someone who has paid so much attention to political scientists, I mean, it's almost to be expected, I guess, in an election year that everything would sort of be politicized. I mean, that seems to me just the way things are now. You end your column talking about this present darkness. Well, that seems to be part of the present darkness. In an election year, it's always politicized. Is that a vast overstatement on my part? I'm not a political scientist, but is this kind of what's to be expected in an election year?
No, I think you're exactly right, Jeanette. In fact, you know, President Trump visited the John Paul II Shrine in Washington, D.C. Right. this past week. And it was, I tell you, I was blown away at how he was viciously attacked for this. And I think a lot of the attackers didn't even realize that he was there on June 2nd. And June 2nd, it was June 2nd, 1979, that John Paul II landed in Warsaw and started his famous 9-day pilgrimage to Poland, which was one of the greatest overtures and actions on behalf of international religious freedom in literally the last 50 years. So what he did going there for the purpose of recognizing international religious freedom was completely appropriate, totally appropriate. And yet the criticisms were aimed at him and stuff to do with the riots and tear gas and human dignity. It's like, whoa, wait a sec. If you want to criticize him on that stuff, go ahead. But he went to the shrine in a pre-planned visit because it had to do with religious freedom. Would you expect the shrine to tell him to take a hike? You know, right. No, you can't come here.
A very difficult.
It's a shame that everything has to be so politicized.
Very difficult moment, both for the shrine and really for Catholics who are watching, because you see this tension, and it was just an extremely, extremely awkward moment. We're already out of time, but I want to make sure our readers know what story to follow, or I guess which column to follow by Paul Kengor here. It's called Riots, Pandemic, and Astronauts, How 2020 is Like 1969 All Over Again. Paul, as always, thank you for being on your favorite show.
Always good to be with you. Thanks, Jeanette.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.